It's been a long time since I've been in a high school PE, but I remember having to when you had to do those run the tour or you had to do those long distance runs. Man, was that tough! Wasn't that tough running those long distance runs? You know, especially I remember going to Ladera Vista when they would call it the tour, and we'd have to run around the outside fence. I don't know if they still do that or not. Man, that was so hard, just running and running. It seemed like it was forever that you were running. You want to quit, you want to stop, you want to give up, and you have to keep reminding yourself that the end is just a little further. The end is just a little further. And that's a little bit about why we do this prophecy update thing once a year. We could approach it as if we're trying to wow each other with the latest and greatest secrets of biblical prophecy. But you know what? The whole goal, gang, is just to remember that it's just a little bit further. Just a little bit further. I think you'd have to be deaf, dumb, and blind to be ever read your Bible and look at the newspaper side by side and not wonder what in the world is going on. And not wonder if we aren't getting close to the end. It just seems so close, and it's just a little farther. Sometimes life gets real tough, doesn't it? Sometimes life just stinks. I know for some of you, this has not been a good year. Looking back over the last 12 months, where were you a year ago? And for some of you, you've gone through some tough things this year. This year's been a difficult one. You know what? Just a little further. Just a little further. Jesus said, when you see these things coming to pass, look up, because your redemption draws nigh. And that's what we want to do tonight. We want to be looking up. We want to be keeping our eyes on Jesus and on what's up ahead. Matthew 24, verse 42, Jesus says, "Watch therefore, for ye know not what hour your Lord doth come. But know this, that if the good man of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. Therefore, be ye also ready, for in such an hour as ye think not, the Son of Man cometh." That's at the heart of why we do this. This is at the heart of why we believe it's important to be aware of the signs of the times. Why we believe it's important to look at the prophetic events, to look at the newspaper, to watch, to keep our eyes open. Because we want to be ready. We want to be ready. Now, you could say to me, well, you know, rich people have been saying this for 2,000 years. And I would say, you're right. You're right. But you know what, gang? That's what God's heart is. God's heart is that you and I be ready. Because whether it's in the rapture, or if you are a post-tribber and want to believe that we're going to go through the rapture, that's okay. You know what? When we get all zapped up into heaven, you know, we'll just have a great time ribbing each other, won't we? I don't, you know, that's fine if you want to hold to a post trip. That's okay. But we want to be ready. We want to be ready. We want to be ready. And whether it's in the rapture or whether it's even in death, because that happens. You know that? We don't want to realize that. We want to forget about that. But the truth is, every one of us at one day is either going to be raptured into heaven or we're going to die. There will be a day when we will see our King face to face. And the whole purpose, over and over in Scripture, we are told to be ready. So, here we go. Matthew chapter 24. Let's go back to verse 1. We've done this many times in the past, and we will do this many times. No, maybe we might not do this many times. I better change that, huh? Who knows? Maybe this will be our last time we have to do this. How about that? Signs of the times, Matthew 24, verse 1. And Jesus went out and departed from the temple, and his disciples came to him for to show him the buildings of the temple. And Jesus said unto them, "See ye not all these things? Verily I say unto you, there shall not be left here one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down." And he sat upon the Mount of Olives. The disciples came unto him privately, saying, "Tell us, when shall these things be? And what shall be the sign of thy coming and of the end of the world?" It's a question everybody wants to know. And Jesus answered and said unto them, "Take heed that no man deceive you. For many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and shall deceive many. And ye shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that ye be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass. But the end is not yet. War stirs us up. War stirs us up. We've got some folks in church. Gene Thorpe, he's got about half a dozen relatives over in Iraq right now. He's just constantly praying for his, he's got a son and I don't know who else is over there. War stirs us up. War makes us think about the end. And it's a part of what's going to happen. There are going to be wars. There's going to be rumors of wars. Way back in 1947, a magazine called The Bulletin of the Atomic Scientist published what they call its doomsday clock. And it's something where from time to time they will update the time based on what they think the world conditions are. And at some points in 1947, the clock read 7 minutes to midnight. In 1949, the Soviet Union exploded the first nuclear missile warhead and the clock moved to 3 minutes to midnight. Got as far as 2 minutes to midnight in 1953 when the U.S. and USSR exploded warheads within 9 months of each other. In 1991, it moved back to 17 minutes to midnight. When the START Treaty was signed in 1998, it moved to 9 minutes to midnight when India and Pakistan went public with their nuclear programs. In 2002, it moved to 7 minutes to midnight as the terrorism increased around the world, and it stays there at 7 minutes to midnight. That's just what the secular folks think. You know, we're getting close. We're getting close to the end. There is war happening all over the world. In Congo, the International Rescue Committee reports that 6 years of continuing conflict in the Congo have claimed 3.8 million lives. Do you know that? That's stuff that I don't pick up in the news. In the Congo, 3.8 million people have died because of war over the last 6 years. Look at Ezekiel 38. There is a war around the corner that we do expect to happen, and I think this thing could happen at any time. I think we might be around to see this thing. We call it the Gog and Magog thing. That's my official title, the Gog and Magog thing. In Ezekiel 38 and 39, there is an invasion of Israel described, an invasion that we don't think has taken place. I don't know. I know some people like to say that almost everything in the Bible has already been fulfilled. It's going to be fulfilled. And I don't, you know, I don't know. This one, I'd have a hard time seeing how this one has been fulfilled. And the word of the Lord came unto me, Ezekiel writes, Ezekiel 38, verse 1. O son of man, set thy face against Gog, the land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, and prophesy against him, and say, thus saith the Lord God, behold, I am against thee, O Gog, the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal. Verse 4, and I will turn thee back and put hooks into thy jaws, and I will bring thee forth, and all thine army, horses and horsemen, all of them clothed with all sorts of armor, even a great company with bucklers and shields, all of them handling swords. A great invasion is described, and we're given the names of some of these nations. Some of these things like Meshach, Tubal, Gog, Magog have been linked to modern Russia. And you know what, gang? Even though we've looked at Mr. Putin in a fairly positive light, I don't know if you've been watching the news, but it's been changing. They're talking about him consolidating his power again, and almost they're wondering whether he's turning Russia back into a dictatorship. The election mess in the Ukraine. You follow that? You follow that poor fellow, Mr. Yushchenko? Have you seen those pictures of his face before and after? Like 6 months ago, the guy looked like a movie star. And apparently he was poisoned by somebody with this dioxin stuff, and now he's got the worst case of zits that anybody's ever seen. I mean, it's just horrible. Yushchenko is opposed by Putin. He wanted the Yanukovych guy to win, because the guy promised to get close to the Kremlin again. Apparently Mr. Putin wants to restore the Soviet Union. He wants to bring everybody back in the fold. This year, another thing, I don't know if you're aware of it, the big Russian petroleum company, Yukos, the Kremlin just bought it back this year. And everybody's crying foul. They're wondering why it's happened. He's trying to bring power back to Russia. Verse 5, it mentions other nations that will join this power, this that comes from the north, Persia, Ethiopia, and Libya with them, all of them with shield and helmet. Persia is modern Iran. I'm sure you're all aware of how Iran has been kind of trying to get away with making nuclear weapons while not making nuclear weapons and all this kind of stuff. They are part of President Bush's axis of evil, that he calls it. They want very much to destroy Israel. It's not going to be hard to see them get involved. Ethiopia, that'll be interesting to see how that happens. And Libya, even though they've just supposedly disarmed this year and got rid of, they're getting rid of all their mass destruction weapons. We're talking about Colonel Gaddafi here. So, these nations will be with them. Verse 6, Gomer and all his bands. Gomer, he is the guy who joined the U.S. Marine Corps. And Golly! And the house of Togarma of the north quarters of all his bands and many people with thee. Some have suggested, I don't know how to trace these things down. Some have suggested that these may be, Chuck Missler thinks that these are the some of the former USSR satellite countries, the stan countries, Tajikistan and, Cheesy Stan and all this kind of stuff. These are the Muslim ones that are in that used to be the southern part of the Soviet Union. That's what they believe these are. Verse 7. Be thou prepared and prepare for thyself, thou and all thy company that are assembled with thee, and be thou a guard unto them. And so it describes these nations coming together, God putting a hook in their jaw and drawing them down for some reason. I think we may see this someday. I think we may see this someday. And look, skip down to verse 13. There are some nations that raise a stink and say, wait a minute, that's not fair. You shouldn't do this. It says, Sheba and Dedan, and the merchants of Tarshish with all the young lions thereof shall say unto thee, art thou come to take a spoil? Hast thou gathered thy company to take a prey, to carry away silver and gold, to take away cattle and goods, to take a great spoil? So there's going to be some people standing on the sidelines saying, how dare you? Don't do that. Don't go invade Israel like that. Sheba and Dedan are modern Saudi Arabia. Merchants of Tarshish. Tarshish is thought to be, original Tarshish is thought to be in Spain. Some have suggested that maybe it extends to Great Britain. And it mentions the young lions thereof. Some have suggested over the years that the young lions of Tarshish, the young lions, the descendants of Great Britain, might be us. That we would be standing on the sidelines saying, how dare you? You shouldn't go do that. Stop that. I think this may be one of the wars and rumors of wars that are on the horizon. Keep your eyes on the press. It's interesting to see what God's going to do. Let's go back to Matthew 24. Look at some more of these signs of the times. In Matthew 24, verse 7, Jesus goes on and he says, we're going to mostly go through Matthew 24. We'll bounce around to other places, but we'll keep coming back to Matthew 24, verse 7. For nation shall rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom. There shall be famines, pestilences. What's pestilence? Disease. And pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places. Not places where divers are, but means various places. Famines. There's organizations out there that track this stuff. This year, the number of people hungry in the world is up. Last year was 842 million. This year they say there's 852 million people in the world hungry. Since the AIDS epidemic began, which qualifies as pestilence, by the way, 25 million people have died of AIDS. That has caused more than 13 million children to lose either their mother or both parents. Imagine that, 13 million kids out there that are orphans. A lot of it's in Africa. Because the majority of those falling sick with AIDS because most of them are young adults who normally are the ones who harvest crops in some of these third world countries. Because of that, food production has dropped dramatically. And so they're worried about famine conditions in those nations. In southern Africa, close to 500,000 people died of AIDS in 2001 alone. Southern Africa, 500,000 people died of AIDS. And interesting, I know maybe it's apples and oranges, but when our troops are over there and they're worried about, you know, one, two people, and everybody's important. Don't get me wrong, everybody's important. But we worry about, you know, five people getting killed here, two people getting killed here. In 2001, 500,000 people died of AIDS in one country alone. That's amazing. It's fueling a serious food crisis. In 2002 to 2003, in which more than 14 million people faced hunger and starvation. 42 million people in the world have HIV or AIDS. 92% of them are in third world developing countries. For most of it is. 3 million are children under the age of 15 that have AIDS. Here's an article from October 17th, 2004 from Sudan. The World Health Organization releases a report that states up to 70,000 refugees have died in Sudan's Darfur region since March 1st. So that's, what, 9 months. 70,000 refugees died due to various things like disease and malnutrition. There's a lot of famine and pestilence going on. And you know what? We just don't even get it, do we? We don't even see it. We don't even see. I know you talked about doing like that 30-hour famine thing with the youth group. You know, maybe we got to do that as a church sometime, you know, because, gang, I'm not sure that it's not even on my radar. My goodness, I worry if there's just a little too much rain outside, you know. And there's a whole lot going on in the world, gang. Earthquakes. Jesus mentions earthquakes. Anybody know about any earthquakes happening lately? Now, we have to be careful because us preachers like to make it sound like, wow, there's more and more earthquakes, more and more all the time. Actually, the earthquake count is pretty steady. Earthquake count is pretty steady over the years. You can check all this out on the U.S. Geological Survey on the web. But there have been some pretty serious things. In October, there was a series of earthquakes ranging from 6.8 to 5.6 hit Japan, killing at least 39 people, injuring more than 2,700. 1,400 buildings destroyed during the quakes, triggering blackouts, landslides, and stuff like that. And you know about the big one on the day after Christmas, Sunday morning, 7:58 local time off the west coast of northern Sumatra. We worry about a 7.2 earthquake. Theirs was a 9.0, followed by the tsunamis, which, because it was so far offshore, the shaking of the ground, waters released, and these huge tidal waves. The numbers are changing, you know, almost every hour of how many people were killed. When I got this copied, it said over 135,000 people died. They're saying now it's going to be closer to 150,000 people. Almost 80,000 people killed in Indonesia. Most of them in Sumatra. About 80,000 people have died in Sumatra. India, 41,000 people in Sri Lanka, 10,000 in India, 4,000 in Thailand. Colin Powell said on NBC's Meet the Press today, he said, "This is one of the most massive relief efforts ever mounted in response to one of the worst catastrophes the world has ever seen." A 9.0. It's the biggest earthquake in 40 years. Last big one was in Anchorage. It was 9.2 in Anchorage. Look at Revelation 16, verse 17. Stay, keep your finger in Matthew. We'll be back. Revelation 16, verse 17. It says, and the seventh angel, This is during the tribulation period. This is around the corner. This is not yet. This is around the corner. Revelation 16:17. The seventh angel poured out his vial into the air, and there came a great voice out of the temple of heaven from the throne saying, "It is done." And there were voices and thunders and lightnings. There was a great earthquake, such as was not since men were upon the earth, so mighty an earthquake and so great. And the great city was divided into three parts. We think this is Jerusalem. The cities of the nations fell, and great Babylon came in remembrance before God to give unto her the cup of the wine of the fierceness of his wrath. And every island fled away, and the mountains were not found. He used to teach, well, that's such a bad earthquake, all the islands just, sink. But after last week, I think I look at it a little different, don't you? The tsunamis, the huge tidal waves. Somebody was telling me that one of the islands off of Indonesia, the entire island was wiped clean because the water rose higher than, the whole island was no more than 40 feet above sea level, and the tsunami was higher than that. Don't think of big killer breaker waves like off of, Newport Beach or something like that. The pictures were just this giant swell. It just kept coming. Verse 21, and there fell upon men a great hail out of heaven, every stone about the weight of a talent, 75 pounds. And men blasphemed God because of the plague of the hail, for the plague thereof was exceeding great. Why do I take us here? Because you know what, gang? As incredibly devastating as last week's earthquake was, it'll get worse. Remember after September 11th, the devastation, the terror, the fear. Was anybody afraid after September 11th? I remember I kept my kids home from school because I who knew where the next thing was going to hit? I want everybody with me. I want to be able to keep my hands on everybody. I was terrified. I was bad. I was really bad, really terrified. And I remember back in 2001, looking at Revelation 17 and 11, 17 and 18, where it talks about the destruction of Babylon the Great, and talks about how in 1 hour the smoke will rise up, the city's destroyed and everything. And I just couldn't help but think of these pictures of the two towers. And the point was that back with the two towers, that's just a taste of what's around the corner. It's not the thing. It's not the real thing. It's a taste of what's around the corner. Yet you and I are beginning to get glimpses of what is around the corner. This 9.0 earthquake, the tsunamis, it's a taste of what can happen. It can happen. It will happen. Because you know what? Jesus is going to come back. Don't think of the destruction. Think about what the goal is. Jesus is going to come back. Why is all this destruction going to happen on the earth? Because there will be a time to make things right. God's going to make things right. We're a nation that watches all these. We love to watch the news of all these trials and Scott Peterson trial and the what's the movie actor Robert Blake trial now coming up. We're all going to watch that, and all these trials, and we want justice to be done, and everybody goes, yeah, and Scott Peterson's guilty, yeah, and we go, oh, bummer when some jerk gets off or something, and all. But why? Because there's something in us that wants justice. And you know what, gang? There will be justice. God will punish sin. There will be a day when God will punish sin. That's what's happening. That's what's around the corner. Keep in mind, gang, it's for Jesus coming back. That's what we're looking for. That's what we're holding on to. Let's go back to Matthew 24, verse 8. Matthew 24, verse 8. Jesus says, all these are the beginning of sorrows.
Boy, can't that be it? Can't we be done?
All these are the beginning of sorrows. Then shall they deliver you up to be afflicted and shall kill you, and ye shall be hated of all nations for my name's sake. Jesus talks about a rise of persecution. Now, you know what, gang? We are not persecuted. I mean, you might have somebody call you a Jesus freak at school or something like that. you know, we are not persecuted. Does persecution exist? You betcha it does. You betcha. A fellow named Dan Wooding wrote an article a few years back. And he did some tabulating and came up with this fact that more people have died for their faith in the 20th century than in all the previous centuries combined. During this century, we have documented cases in excess of 26 million martyrs. But from AD 33 to 1900, we have documented 14 million martyrs. More people have died for Christianity in this century than the rest of the 1900 centuries combined. Yes, persecution is going on. Here's something that came out of China. This happens in China. This is from the Voice of the Martyrs website. The article starts, top house church leader arrested in China. It's dated December 10th. It's just a few weeks back. One of the most prominent Chinese house church leaders, Pastor Zhang Rongliang, was arrested on December 1st, 2004. There has been no communication with Pastor Zhang since his arrest, but it is believed he is in custody in the Zhengzhou area of the Henan province. Zhang is the leader of the Fangcheng Mother Church, Henan, and the leader of the China for Christ Church, which is one of the largest house church networks in China, estimated to have more than 10 million members. There's a church in China. There's a church. It's underground. It's pretty big. And this fellow is one of the leaders of this. He's already spent 12 years in prison for his faith during five separate detentions since his secret baptism in 1969. He experienced harsh torture, including electric shocks during his prison terms. His arrest comes in the midst of a serious crackdown on China's house churches. In September, in Kaifeng City alone, there were 100 pastors were arrested. At least 11 have been sentenced to 1 to 3 years of so-called re-education through labor. Here's something that came out of Australia. Of Australia. Putting another shrimp on the barbie. This came from Des Daniels, who's the pastor of Calvary Chapel in Sydney. There's been a prominent court case in the state of Victoria where they have, this is Australia. This isn't China. This isn't Russia. Russia's pretty cool right now, right? Isn't it? Russia's a pretty cool place. In fact, in some ways, it's a little easier to preach the gospel in Russia than it is right now here. There's been a prominent court case in the state of Victoria where a religious anti-vilification law introduced by the Labor government. The deal is that you can't speak badly about anybody, is the thing. And there was two pastors from Catch the Fire Ministries. It's an Assembly of God group. They were arrested under the legislation because they spoke out against Islam at a teaching conference they held. Both pastors were converted from Islam and spoke from personal experience. The Muslims had plants in the meetings and brought charges. The pastors were found guilty and are awaiting sentences because they spoke out against Islam. Interesting. That's in Australia. Whether it'll come over here, I don't know. We'll see. Matthew 24, verse 10. And then shall many be offended and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another, and many false prophets shall arise and shall deceive many. Gang, our world is full of religion. It wasn't this way 30 years ago, maybe 40 years ago. 30, 40 years ago, America was a land of the atheists and the nothing happening stuff. And now we are a land of spiritual, we're a spiritual land. Everybody wants religion. But it's religion on my terms, what I want, my stuff. And gang, the way to stay clear of the goofy stuff is to stay in the book. Stay in the book. You don't need other stuff. You need to just stay in the book. This is where we're going to stay close to what God has for us. Verse 12, Matthew 24, verse 12. And because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. The word iniquity means lawlessness, a sense of going away from God's laws, breaking God's laws. Because of iniquity, the love of many shall wax or grow cold. There's a little bit of an increase of lawlessness in our land. I'm not talking about the crime rate. I'm talking about straying away from God's standard. For example, here's another one from Australia, from the Sydney Morning Herald online. July 27th. Getting divorced keeps getting easier. These days, it's simply a matter of logging on to log off your married life. No meeting with lawyers, no going anywhere in your courtroom, just you and your computer. Hundreds have used the www.divorce.com.au for Australia, most of whom, and don't write that down, okay? I'm going to wonder about you. Most of whom want to move on as quickly as possible without any interaction with the ex. After filling out the interactive divorce application from the Federal Magistrates Court website, it is corrected by a solicitor and lodged with the court, and within 12 weeks, you're divorced, just by going online. How about that? Now, is it legal? Yes. Is it lawless? Yes. This year, you remember what happened around Valentine's Day in our dear own California? Up in San Francisco, the land of the trolleys. And, yes. February 13th, history was made at 11:06 a.m. today. It's from the San Francisco Chronicle. Today at San Francisco City Hall, when Del Martin and Phyllis Lyon took their wedding vows, becoming the first same-sex couple to be officially married in the United States. And that's kind of interesting, you know, especially since we had just approved this thing that marriage is between a man and a woman. Well, that wasn't even legal, was it? And it was also lawless as well. November 30th, 2004, the U.S. Supreme Court says it will not hear legal arguments against the Massachusetts Supreme Court decision mandating same-sex marriage. But the political legal battles over gay marriage are far from over. Here's from the Baptist Press. This is just a couple days ago. The court battle to legalize same-sex marriage in California got its start December 22nd when lawyers for both the city of San Francisco and homosexual activist groups asked a judge to throw out the state's marriage laws. In Canada, 7 of Canada's 10 provinces now issue marriage licenses to homosexual couples. In Canada, it's legal. Does that make it right? Does that make it law? Is it lawless? Yes. Yes, it's lawless. Here's something talking about lawlessness. This is from the Miami Herald. It's an article about the Netherlands, dated November 30th. The title is, headline is, Netherlands Hospital Euthanizes Babies. Amsterdam, Netherlands. A hospital in the Netherlands, the first nation to permit euthanasia, recently proposed guidelines for mercy killings of terminally ill newborns, and then made a startling revelation. It's already done now. Interesting. 3 years ago, the Dutch Parliament made it legal for doctors to euthanize adults who asked for it. Is it legal? Yes. Is it lawless? Yeah, it's lawless. It's lawless. Here's Romans 1:21. Let me just read this to you. It says, yes, they knew God, but they wouldn't worship Him as God or even give Him thanks. And they began to think of foolish ideas of what God was like. The result was that their minds became dark and confused. Claiming to be wise, they became utter fools instead. So that's what happens when we worship the creature rather than the creator. We become idiots, and we start thinking certain things are right, like evolution. Here's an article from ABC News. ABC News. Dun, 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 dun. London, May 9th. Give an infinite number of monkeys an infinite number of typewriters, the theory goes, and they will eventually produce the works of Shakespeare. You heard that? You probably have if you've been to high school. Right, you've heard that, right? Right. That's behind the theory of evolution. Random chance mutation. You know, you just give enough years. How does evolution happen? Because millions and millions and billions of years, right? That can make anything happen, right? Are you with me? Do you remember all those evolution arguments from school? Okay. So they tried this in London. They gave 6 monkeys 1 computer for a month. And what did they find? They make a mess. Researchers at Plymouth University in England reported this week that primates left alone with a computer attacked the machine and failed to produce a single word. They pressed a lot of S's, researcher Mike Phillips said today. Obviously, English isn't their first language. It talks about them making a mess. The male lead got a stone and started bashing the heck out of it. Another thing they were interested in was defecating and urinating all over the keyboard. Eventually, monkeys Elmo, Gum, Heather, Holly, Mistletoe, and Rowan produced 5 pages of text composed primarily of the letter S. Later, letters A, J, L, and M crept in. The notion that monkeys typing at random will eventually produce literature is often attributed to Thomas Huxley, the 19th century scientist who supported Darwin's theories of evolution. Mathematicians have also used it to illustrate concepts of chance. Well, it's foolishness. It's foolishness. And so we've been talking about where Jesus said, because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall grow cold. Luke says it this way. Luke records a little differently. Luke 21:26, Luke says, men's hearts failing them for fear and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of heaven shall be shaken. In Luke, Jesus says, people's hearts will be failing them for fear. We have a name for that nowadays. It's called terrorism. Isn't that the purpose of terrorism? To make your hearts fail for fear? And we know a little bit about that now, don't we? We know a little bit about that. Has anything happened this year? Well, yeah, sure. Remember the terrorists did it here on 9/11. In Spain, they did it on 3/11. And it changed their nation, didn't it? Remember they blew up the trains in Spain? And because of that, the election, which was the next week, the election changed. And Spain got out of the terrorism war. They backed out. August 24th, Russia, 2 passenger jets blew up almost simultaneously, went off the radar. And they believe it was Chechen terrorists, 2 gals on the plane blew themselves up. Does anybody remember the events in September in Russia, the Moscow bombings? Anybody remember thinking about that? Anybody even remember vaguely thinking about that? You know, we were worried as heck about you guys. You guys didn't even know about it, but we were worried about you. And then there was the tragedy a few days later in Beslan, where hundreds were killed in the school. Terrorism is a big deal. But if terrorists don't make you afraid, how about the weather? I got 3 pages of weather stuff here. I don't know how this fits in, but gang, this is weird. We've had a weird year of weather. I couldn't believe how many things I came across that said this is the worst, blah, 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 blah. May 25th, Haiti, Haiti and the Dominican Republic. Floods in the Dominican Republic and Haiti kill at least 3,000 people. July 30th, Bangladesh. Floodwaters swirling through Dhaka. Heavy monsoon rains, worst since 1998. More than 25 million people are displaced. August 13th, China. Typhoon Ranannim hits China's southeastern coast late Thursday with winds of more than 100 miles per hour. 160 people killed. Ranannim is the most powerful typhoon to strike China since 1997. August 13th, United States. Bonnie and then Charlie hit. And then in September, Ivan hit. Billions and billions and billions. Remember that? Remember all the relief efforts going in? Doesn't that seem like so long ago? In September 19th, Haiti, Tropical Storm Jean kills 1,500 people. I don't know how much we were aware of that. I don't know. Maybe it just seems like so long ago. October 21st, Japan, Typhoon Tokagi strikes Japan's main islands. It's a record 10th typhoon to hit Japan this year. Have a record number of typhoons in Japan. November 30th in the Philippines, 1,600 people reported dead missing after the typhoon comes. The worst storm season to hit the archipelago in 13 years. Look at let me just read to you Revelation 16:21. We already read that. It says, there was a terrible hailstorm. Hailstones weighing 75 pounds fall from the sky. So wait, there's more. And it gets worse. It gets worse. Matthew 24, verse 13. It says, he shall endure, but he that shall endure unto the end, the same shall be saved. And the gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come. But Jesus doesn't have to wait to come back before. Some folks have suggested that Jesus can't come back until we reach the world. We have to reach the world for Christ, and then he will come back. Well, in the book of Revelation, we're told that an angel will fly through the heaven preaching the gospel. What that is, how that works, I don't know. But God will find a way to do that. But you know what? You and I still have a wonderful opportunity to be a part of this, of reaching the world for Jesus. We talked this morning about, you know, just tell your story. Just tell your story. Sometimes we think that I've got to be the Greg Laurie of my work, you know, or the Greg Laurie of my school, and and that's what it means. I have to lead everybody to Christ. You know what? You know what? Maybe you can just be the wild man of Gadara. You know? And now that you're clothed and in your right mind, I hope, just tell your story. Just tell your story. They'll come to Jesus. It may be next year after you're gone, but just tell your story. Sometimes just telling your story is the thing that just warms up the atmosphere so that people realize there is an answer. Matthew 24, verse 15. I believe that this next section applies to those who will be alive on the planet after the time of the rapture. Specifically, I believe it applies to the Jews in Israel at this time. Jesus says this in Matthew 24, 15. He says, when ye therefore shall see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet stand in the holy place, whoso readeth, let him understand. So you need to understand what the abomination of desolation is and what happens when it stands in the holy place. Actually, you don't have to, because we'll probably be gone. But it wouldn't hurt for you to understand. The abomination of desolation, it means the abomination that brings desolation. The abomination. What's an abomination? What's the abominable snowman? No, that's not the right thing. Abomination. Abomination is something that's totally, man, so gross. Man, that's the worst thing in the world. Oh, totally yucky. You know, we saw this really gross movie the other night. Oh, my gosh. We saw Anaconda. I can't believe I saw that movie. And, you know, people, there's some parts where people were being barfed out by the snakes, you know, and they're covered with slime and crud and all of this kind of stuff. That is, listen, that is what an abomination is. Something that's barfed out by an anaconda. But an abomination, something that grows to you, but it's that gross to God. That's what an abomination is. Something that, you know, something makes you kind of, well, when it causes God to do that, that is an abomination. The abomination of desolation. The most grossest thing that causes God to say, no more. Desolation. Now, what that means is that the Antichrist will one day walk into a restored temple and declare himself to be God. I'm not making this up. I'm just putting a whole bunch of scriptures together, saving you 5 Bible studies and putting it into one little sentence. When the Antichrist comes in and declares himself God and demands that the world worships him, God goes, just like the snake barfed somebody up. Excuse me for being gross, but that's what an abomination is. And God will say, oh, this is horrible. And God will say, no more. So Jesus says, when you see the abomination of desolation standing in the holy place, then let them which be in Judea flee into the wilderness. Let them which is in the housetop not come down to take anything out of his house. Neither let him which is in the field return but back to take his clothes. And woe to them that are with child and them that give suck in those days. But pray ye that your flight be not in the winter, neither on the Sabbath day. Now who would care about whether you're fleeing on a Sabbath day or not? Only Jews. Only Jews. And he's talking to Jewish people. He says, for then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor shall ever be. And except those days should be shortened, there should be no flesh saved. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. The elect's sake are the Jews that are still alive. Then if any man shall say unto you, lo, here is Christ, or there, believe it not. For there shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders, insomuch that if it were possible, they shall deceive the very elect. Now he's talking about what we call the tribulation period. When one of the main characters in this thing is a person we call the Antichrist. Do we know who he is? No. We know some characteristics about him, but that's a whole other study. One of the things that we kind of tend to do every year at these prophecy update things is talk about the mark of the beast. Because that's something we're told in the book of Revelation, that the Antichrist will require everyone to have some kind of a mark, either on their forehead or their right hand, and somehow it's tied to a number, and if you don't have this mark or this number, then you can't buy or sell, and you're going to have a tough time surviving. And so typically at this point in the message, the pastors will talk about all the advance in technology. And 30 years ago, you know, we used to hear about credit cards. You know, one day everybody's going to have these plastic things and, you know, computers and stuff. And nowadays we don't blink at credit cards. We don't blink at going to the ATM and all. There are advances in technology happening where I believe the FDA this year approved RFID implants in the United States. So for medical things, so that you can have you can go to the hospital and have them implant this thing so that when you go to the hospital, they can read your little radio frequency identifier that has your medical information tied to it. And they just scan your hand, and then the doctors know who you are and what you have and stuff. Well, that's been approved now by the FDA. There is a club in Spain where they've taken the RFID thing and tied it to MasterCard or something like that. And you can go, this is in Barcelona. You want to go to the Baja Beach Club in Barcelona, they will implant you with a chip. And you can go into their club and order drinks cheaper and stuff like that. And you don't have to pull out your credit card. You just wave your hand there, you know. Here's something I came across. This is called, this is from Crockett's Bluff, Arkansas. In a startling collision of modern technology and ministry, Crockett's Bluff Community Church is the first known church in America to use Logitech's biochip technology to receive its weekly tithes and offerings. According to last year's church theme, BID'd with CBCC in 03, the congregation of 15,782 outfitted each member of its flock with a subdermal microchip in the right hand. The device, smaller than a mustard seed, contains the banking information of each worshiper and is scanned by an usher as he or she enters the sanctuary. Pastor Bud Caldwell readily admits news of the action is sure to send. Oh, I'm just joking with ya. I can't keep a straight face as I read this. I saw this thing that came by on the senior pastor email thing, and somebody sent this, and I couldn't believe guys were taking this seriously, and they're going, oh my gosh, it's the Church of the Beast or something, you know, oh my goodness. And you know, why even bring this up? It's because, gang, sometimes we go a little overboard on these things. And, you know, when it comes to these RFID things and credit cards and stuff like that, this is not the mark of the beast yet. What's important is to understand that the technology is there so that it can happen. But the mark of the beast will be tied to the worship of the Antichrist. That's what the book of Revelation says. You don't take the mark of the beast thinking, you know, you're going to get my credit card. I'm using this for my credit card. No, you take the mark of the beast because you are going to worship this person. You're going to follow this person. That's what it's about. the mark is tied, it's linked hip to hip with the worship of the Antichrist. So should you be afraid of getting a credit card? No, no, no. Should you be afraid of paying your bills by online banking? No, 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 no. Are you worried about identity theft? Well, you probably should be about that, right? Right? Should worry about, just like worry about spam and viruses and all that kind of stuff. But gang, I think we need to have our feet on the ground with this kind of stuff and not get swept up with every latest thing. We need to be a little bit careful with some of this stuff. A lot of it careful. Boy, I am running out of time and I still got 20 pages of notes. Matthew 24, verse 25. Well, let's skip down to verse 32. Let's just skip down to verse 32. So I want to talk about some of the stuff with Israel. Now learn a parable of the fig tree. When his branch is yet tender and putteth forth leaves, ye know that summer is nigh. So likewise ye, when ye shall see all these things, know that it is near, even at the doors. Verily I say unto you, this generation shall not pass away till all these things be fulfilled. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words shall not pass away. One of the great symbols of Israel, of the nation of Israel, is the fig tree. And he's talking about when you see the fig tree coming back, when you see the leaves coming out, you know what? It's close. And gang, you know, I will say this every year, I will continue to say this, one of the greatest miracles of prophetic fulfillment that you and I live with daily, and we kind of get used to it, is the establishment of the nation of Israel in 1948. Gang, no nation has ever been wiped out, destroyed, obliterated, scattered across the globe, and ever come back as a nation. This is an incredible people, incredible nation. God's hand is on this. And this is one of the greatest signs that ought to wake us up that we are close to the end. We are close. He is right at the door. Keep your eyes on Israel. The bestest thing you can ever do to, if you want to keep track of prophecy, is keep your eyes on Israel. All kinds of incredible, interesting things are happening in Israel. There's something that happened in October. I had an article from the IsraelInternationalNews.com. They launched a new Sanhedrin. Hasn't been a Sanhedrin in 1,400 years. There's now another, it's a council of 71 rabbis. Who will now make judgments of what is Jewish and what's not, what's right and what's wrong. Interesting. That's just totally fascinating. I've got a whole long article here, and I won't read it, so that saves a whole other page. Cool. There are things, and to tell you the truth, I'm not smart enough to sort it all out, but there's some scriptures. 1 Thessalonians 5:3 says, when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction cometh upon them as travail upon a woman with child, and they shall not escape. And with that, there's the Gog Magog. I'll try to put this together in a second. Gog Magog, in Ezekiel 38:11, it says, and thou shalt say, I will go up to the land of unwalled villages. I will go to them that are at rest, that dwell safely, all of them dwelling without walls, and neither having bars nor gates. What I'm trying to do is put this together, is that there needs to be a situation of peace in the Middle East. When they are saying peace and safety, sudden destruction. Gog and Magog will come marching down to a land of unwalled villages. People that are, hey, no problem. You know, we put our weapons away a long time ago. It's ours for the taking. Now, in Israel, there is a wall. They've started building this wall to separate the Palestinians and the Israelis. I'm curious about that. I don't know how all that fits in. But I'm very fascinated that was it a month ago that Mr. Arafat died? And we're all wondering what's going to happen. Mr. Abbas, Abu Abbas, or whatever his name is, the potential new president of the Palestinian people, was in the paper today saying that he's going to protect all the militants. He's not going to let Israel just take it. But I think he's trying to win his own people. I don't know. I think the West folks in Israel feel that Mr. Abbas is going to bring peace. And if he brings peace, and the Israel and Palestinians, if this roadmap to peace happens, does that mean Jesus isn't going to come back? No, it means I'm getting excited. Pack your bags. When everybody lets down their guard. Another thing, we talked about the abomination of desolation. For the abomination of desolation to happen, there has to be a temple. Revelation 11 describes a temple during the end times, during the tribulation period. And so we think, you put all the pieces together, there needs to be a temple. There needs to be something to be desecrated for an abomination to be made desolate. Just has to happen. We've seen over the years, there is a group in Israel called the Temple Institute. You can go, interesting website. I know Bradley in Jerusalem kind of eyes them cautiously. So I guess I want to be careful about putting too much on them. But these are the folks that are claiming they're going to rebuild the thing, and they're getting ready. Over the years, they have already built the menorah, the golden lampstand in the holy place. They have rebuilt the golden altar of incense. They're preparing things for the temple. This year, they've been weaving. It took them a couple years to perfect the technique of weaving the gold threads into the red and blue linen threads that are described in the book of Exodus for the high priest robe. Well, they've got that down. They've now woven the thing, and they've got the breast piece put together. They put all the stones together. They're ready. They've already got the thing. They've got the garments for a high priest. This year, they've also completed a bunch of more implements. I've got some stuff. It'll be on our web page, because I just got some really cool pictures of all these things that they've made. They've made now all the implements for sacrifice, stuff for catching blood, a copper vessel made for offerings of meal offerings. They've got shovels to scoop out the ashes. They've got this one thing is really cool, a silver cup with a golden handle on it thing, used for the ceremony at Sukkot, where they take water from the Pool of Siloam and march up to the temple. This is John 7, where Jesus says, "If any man be thirsty, let him come to me and drink." And anyway, they're getting ready. They're getting ready. They've got a handy dandy menorah cleansing vessel. All kinds of stuff. Here's something that back in January from MSNBC. Israeli geologists said Monday they have examined a stone tablet detailing repair plans for the Jewish temple of King Solomon that, if authenticated, would be a rare piece of physical evidence confirming biblical narrative. And it's got a picture of this stone tablet that talks about the temple. Why is that important? Because during the peace negotiations, the Palestinians claimed back in 2000 there was no Jewish temple. Never has been. There's no evidence that there ever was a Jewish place of worship on their mount. Can you, the gall of these people? And so this was a very cool find this year, and they seem to have dated it to the time of Joash, and when he kind of worked to restore Solomon's temple. So there's a lot of cool things happening, kind of building the pressure, that getting things ready. Well, let's just end. Let's go back to Matthew 24, verse 42. Matthew 24, verse 42. "Watch therefore, for ye know not what hour your Lord doth come. But know this, that if the good man of the house had known at what watch the thief would come, he would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken up. Therefore be ye also ready, for in such an hour as ye think not, the Son of Man cometh. God wants you to be ready. In 2 Peter chapter 3, Peter says, look, if all these things are going to happen, what sort of lives should you be living? What sort of lives should you be living? I think of, I don't know why I've got this picture in my head, but I don't think I was ever a bad kid in when I was in high school or anything. But it's kind of like if your parents went away for a trip and you're home alone. What was that movie? What was that movie with Tom Cruise? were they the risky business, that kind of a thing. I don't know if I've even ever seen that movie, but you know, the parents are away, so you play and you have fun and just get wild and rowdy and have a party and stuff like that. And then they come home early. Well, it's a little bit like that, gang. It's a little bit like that. You want to have the house, you know, clean, neat and clean, have done the dishes, picked up the dirty laundry, you know. Are you ready for your master to come back? Because he is. He's coming back. I hope that tonight, if nothing more, maybe have stirred you up to think about that. This year could be, some cool stuff could be happening this year. Whether he comes back this year, I don't know. It would be okay with me. But it'd be okay with you if Jesus comes back. I hope none of you are of the kind that says, oh, I don't want Jesus to come back yet, not yet, not yet. I hope you kind of are thinking, you know, I can hardly wait. It'd be okay. Get ready for him. Get ready for him. Live as if it's tomorrow. Could be. On the other hand, maybe he'll give you another year here, and maybe we'll have some cool things that next year we'll look back and go, wow, so glad I got things together. So glad I pushed on and did some of those things. Let's stand and pray.